thanks for tuning in to On the Same Page, a new podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library to keep you in the loop and on the same page about what's happening at your library.
Welcome back. It's June 15th.
Yes.
We are your hosts, Erica.
And Abby.
And today we are going to talk about a program that happened at the Louisa County Library on June 1st.
June 1st.
STEM program for kids.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
By students from MIT that are biking across the country. So you'll hear all about that project.
Yes.
And we're also going to talk to
another local elected official
about why they think summer reading is so important, and reading in particular.
Yes.
And how it has shaped their life.
But first, and as always, book chat.
So we're back to talking about what we're reading in this episode of Book Chat.
What are you reading or have you read recently, Abby?
I just read Brazen, Rebel Ladies Who Rocked the World by Penelope Bejou.
That looked really good.
I'm not sure if I said her last name. So originally it came out last year in French, but it was just translated and printed here in English this year. I think we've talked about some other books that are in a similar vein, like Vashti Harrison's Little Leaders, right? So what this is a collection of short biographies about women who made a significant and lasting impact on the world around them in history. And they're in graphic novel form.
Ones you'd heard of?
Some of them I hadn't. I mean, you know, there's like Mae Jemison. So like, okay, yeah, I've heard of her.
No, I feel like they're all like that. There's the handful that you hear about all the time, and then there's other people who are like, they did what?
What made this sort of unique compared to the others is a lot of these, I feel like this is sort of a trend in books for young people about like these collected biographies of women in graphic novel form, but often it's just a page or two dedicated to each woman. But in this book in particular, each woman gets several pages and it's written out as like a full comic strip. So it's not just one page with all the facts about them kind of around the illustration. It really kind of turns it into a story, which was nice. And it was a wide variety of women from all around the world, from as different a background as you can imagine. It was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. This one is also more geared toward young adult and adult readers.
That's what I was going to ask you.
The others have really kind of been aimed at younger readers, but a lot of the women in this book have dealt with some pretty heavy experiences in their lives, and she doesn't sugarcoat it. So if they've experienced abuse, she calls it what it is, that sort of thing. And there's a little bit of language, but mostly it's just that the heavy content is there for you to see.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really good. Loved it a lot.
I know, I almost grabbed it for me this morning. Did it have holds?
I think so.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Not too many, though.
I think I put it on hold.
Okay, I finished over the course of the last week a book aimed at upper elementary readers, that older, younger readers.
Almost middle grade?
Yeah, middle grade. Young YA, possibly. It's about a teen girl. I think she's 12 now. Living in Pakistan. It's called Amal Unbound. And she loves school so much she wants to be a teacher. But she's the oldest in her family of all girls in the local... I don't know what he is, if he's an elected official or not, the wealthy man who kind of loans money to people. He's a loan shark, that's what he is. And never lets them be paid back. She ends up in servitude in his household as a result of some debts and not in school, and kind of about how she, you know, still tries to find books and still tries to have hope that maybe one day she can finish her education, and she's willing to... She gets people like on her side to help her do this, and how her tenacity really leads to a good outcome for her.
Is this fiction or like memoir?
It's fiction, yeah. So it's one of the founders of We Need Diverse Books, and so she obviously wrote a new
not a new, but like a diverse voice and a diverse setting. Yeah, I love it. I mean, I like reading about that area of the world and the stories coming out of it, but it was good. It had some heavy themes, but they weren't too dark, which I think is a good introduction for the, you know, coming up reader, the one who's maybe not read these stories before or not as familiar with that area of the world and the situations that go on. The author was inspired by Malala.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds...
A girl who's like willing to stand up for what she believes in, sometimes be outspoken, and hopefully have a good outcome despite setbacks.
But the focus on education too is very...
Yeah. I love the whole educate women focus. I've read a lot of books like that, not just in Asia, but set in like Africa and the Caribbean. So yeah, that was really great. I was excited to see that, and I was glad to get my hands on it and finish it. I had to take my time. It was good. I could have finished it really fast, but I liked it.
Wanted to savor it.
Yeah, kind of. Do you have another one?
Yes. I read Starfish by Akemi Don Bowman, and I picked this up because it was a finalist for the Morris Award, which is an award given for a debut young adult novel. And this was about a teen girl, Kiko Himura, I believe, who is half Japanese, but she lives with her mother who is white and always feels like she doesn't fit in, you know, at school, especially at home with her mother. There's a lot of tension there. And she grapples with that, her identity and where she fits in, but also with extreme social anxiety. And she basically lives for the day where she'll be able to leave her mother's house and go to art school. She's finishing up her senior year in high school, and she's only applied to one school. It's an art school. She's waiting to hear back about it. But her descriptions of the artwork are incredible. They're very poetic, and it's more, it'll be something like, you know, she paints a girl realizing this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can actually really kind of imagine what that painting must look like, even though it's something that's not, that's sort of abstract. And so I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, I'm reading a lot more things where there's conflict in the parent-child relationships in YA, which I mean, it's totally understandable, but to see it represented so well.
Yeah, it was hard to read that relationship.
Yeah, that's how I felt about a couple of them there.
It's a very, very strained relationship.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about Summer Lost now by L.A. Condy. L.A. Condy, for YA fans, is the author of the Match trilogy, a dystopian trilogy that came out about 10 years ago when all the Divergent and Hunger Games and all of that was going on. And so this is a new YA novel about a slightly younger teen. It's called Summer Lost. It's about a girl who is... It's been about a year since she lost her...
What? Summer lost or some are lost?
Summer, the season. Okay. All one word, too, because it's...
Just wanted to make
it's
sure.
It's part of it. It's named after the theater festival in town, Summer Lost Festival.
I thought that's what you were saying, but I just wanted to make sure.
So as part of her recovery, her mother has bought this, like, summer home near her grandparents in the village where she grew up, and it's... Her mom's, you know, pours herself into this project of renovating this house in the summer, and... She's kind of at loose ends, and she meets this kid who rides by her house every day. I really thought it was going to be a time travel story for a few minutes, and it isn't, which is fine. He's dressed up as a historical figure because he's going to the Summer Lost Festival, which is kind of like a Shakespeare festival. And for some reason, they can hire like 12 or 13-year-olds. I don't know if they're in a weird state or what it is. I've only ever known it to be 14, but... So they get jobs, like working concessions, and kind of forge this friendship. And there's a little bit of a mystery of how a famous actress died decades and decades before, but she had ties to the Summer Lost Festival. And at the same time, there's a little bit of a mystery of, she keeps sensing the presence of her dead brother almost. It sounds like he was autistic. Like, he definitely processed the world differently, and they struggled with that. And you know, just when they were finally figuring out what worked for him and how he could relate to them, they lost him. She lost him. So she still has a younger brother, and they're trying to, you know, build a new relationship with that gap. It's really, really sweet. I liked all of the relationships and the resolution to the mysteries, because they were, you know, you think it might be a ghost story, and then it's just like, that's how young kids see the world. Like, everything's mystical, and then it turns out there's probably an explanation. And so it was good.
So we hope that at least one of those books sounds interesting to you and gives you an idea for our next read.
Yeah, some should check off some boxes for you on your summer challenge sheet, we hope.
We are cereal box checkers, I think.
Yeah, and so. Not cereal boxes.
Well, sometimes.
Okay, but we anyway. Check boxes serially.
Next up, we have another chat with a local elected official. This time it is Charlottesville City Councilor Kathy Galvin, who we're fortunate enough to have had the opportunity to chat with. So we'll just dive right into that.
All right, we have our next, well, this is a city councilor. Everyone else is a supervisor of a board of a county, but this is for the city of Charlottesville. We have Kathy Galvin with us. Thank you for joining us. She's here to talk about the books she loved reading when she was younger and why summer reading is great. So thank you again for coming.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
So we will go ahead and dive right in. Our first question is, why do you think that it's important to read even when not in school? So this is for children, but also for adults, I think.
Well, I think it sparks the imagination. It's a very active learning. It's not passive. You're not just sitting in a chair watching television or listening to a lecture. So you're the one who's interpreting firsthand another human being's imagination, another human being's life. So when I think back as a child, I was really impressed with biographies. I was impressed by fairy tales, and also just images of animals being animated and having their own agency to change their lives. And so, oh, well, maybe I could be like Scuppers the sailor dog. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing that it's very much about getting that imagination to kick in. And I personally think the imagination is your glimpse into your soul, your inner spirit. Need I say more?
No.
That's great.
So thinking back, what were some of your favorite books when you were little?
I have to thank my mother, first and foremost, for reading to me. She had this series of books called The Young People's Library, and there were stories of brave deeds, and there were stories of magic, but one particular tale was about Joan of Arc. And that led me on a search. I must have been about 8 years old. I mean, I literally went down to our Montello Branch Public Library in Brockton, Massachusetts, and I found this book. It was called Jeanne d'Arc, by M. Boutte de Monvet. So it was written in 1899, and it was beautifully illustrated. He was a graphic artist. And that story of that young girl's life, I think, imprinted upon me this notion that I could be the master of my own destiny. And suffer the consequences. Yeah. interestingly enough, that's been a lifelong love affair, because I did read every book in that little branch library. As I grew older, I was exposed to George Bernard Shaw's St. Joan, and as a birthday present, my sons and my husband gave me tickets. Last week, we went to the Folgers to see the production of St. Joan. So it you know, and I'm in my 60s now, so this is still an inspiring story that I learned as a child next to my mother, then I led in my own pursuit. The other book that was really amazing to me was The Little House by Virginia Lee Burton. And I know, again, that was something that came out in the, I think it was like in the 30s, but it was a story of a little house that was well-loved, and then all around it grew up all this development, and it was abandoned, and it was then discovered by the great-great-granddaughter, who had seen a picture of it in a family album, and the little house is retrieved and put back in a place where she's loved again. So this personification of a house was really thrilling to me, because I grew up in a house that I loved too, an old Victorian. I am an architect, and I also am an urban planner. So this little book, The Little House, is often viewed as a cautionary tale about urban sprawl. Well, you know, I'm devoting my life in many ways to making us much more environmentally sensitive and protective of our natural areas, but I also love cities. I love building. So The Little House might have had something to do with that. The Sailor Dog by Margaret Wise Brown, I think that one was just surviving adversity and turning it into an adventure. Another case where the Scuppers, the dog, is shipwrecked. Garth Williams is the illustrator. Again, I loved illustrations. And he builds a little house on the beach out of driftwood. And I remember just loving this house and building little houses in our little woods, you know? Like Scuppers. And so it was, again, an architecture kind of thing, but it was also, I've become a lifelong traveler. I go around the world, I get shipwrecked every so often in my adventures, and I seem to be able to pick up and go on. Certainly it's not just the book that does that, but it helps. And then I'm originally from Massachusetts, so there is no Massachusetts child, at least of my generation, that was not exposed to Make Way for Ducklings. And that was Robert McCloskey. And I just looked up, and it's interesting that that book is actually considered to be the state of Massachusetts' official book for children.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah, and does Virginia have one of those? I mean, why not?
Not that I know of, but we have a bird
and we have an insect. Why not a children's book? But
we probably have many stories.
We're going to have to research that.
Yeah. So, again, I have two sons of my own. They're 27, 24, 23. But took them to Boston, and of course, in public gardens, there's little statues of the ducklings, and they were read that story. In fact, my sons were read all of the stories that I grew up with. The Little House, the Sailor Dog, Joan of Arc, and Make Way for Ducklings. And they're all lifelong readers. And my son, my 23-year-old, we were driving his car back to his house and saw John Steinbeck on the side, on the passenger side, you know, east of Eden. So I just think it's almost a hereditary thing. Once your parents reading to you and you read to your children, and here it is the summertime, he's out of college, we're all still reading.
Yeah, no, it's a great positive cycle to start. That's just what we're trying to encourage.
Right.
Because not all families have that background.
And it was the public library that was our source of books.
Yeah.
We weren't wealthy. My mom was the breadwinner on a school nurse's salary. My dad was disabled. Our branch library was next to the laundromat. Every time we went to do our clothes, I parked myself in the branch library.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an amazing thing when you think about how it's related to your sense of self, but also your sense of movement as an adult. And I'm reading right now. I usually try to read a fiction and a nonfiction at the same time. It's hard to juggle it, but it takes me a long time to read, because I'm usually, the only time I get to read is late at night. The nonfiction I'm reading now is called The New Localism by Bruce Katz, which is a policy-oriented book. I am a city councilor, but I am an urbanist, and he's one of my favorite urban scholars, but it's very important policy work. Looks at case studies. But then I'm also reading Dr. Rowe's The March. I had just come back from a trip to Savannah, Georgia, for a conference. And so this is a story of a fictional account of Sherman's march through Georgia and the devastation in its wake, but also the kind of the new understandings in its wake. And have been in Savannah to see where Sherman's troops were headquartered, and to see on Federal Order 15, that was the 40 acres and a mule edict, you know, the place that that was issued, was pretty chilling.
Yeah.
And then, you know, before that, I was reading T.S. Eliot's Middlemarch. If marching is a theme, but but coincident with that, I was reading this double biography by Gordon Wood that compared Jefferson and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. So again, this is like we're living it in this area. I'm from Massachusetts. I'm so always interested in the difference between Northern and Southern sensibilities.
Yeah, it's different when you. I'm from New York State, so like okay. Yeah, coming down here is you learn a different history, kind of.
It's a very different history, and that's why it's kind of nice to cross fertilize the experience, right? I probably wouldn't have been so interested in.
Yeah, I never would have
Sherman's march through Georgia. Yeah, if I didn't live here.
Past high school, pretty much. I'm just like, well, that's a thing we learned. But
yeah.
Down here, it's a thing that's still vibrant and being talked about.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So do you have any specific memories of when you were out of school and reading?
I remember just the context of reading. As I mentioned, I was able to grow up in a nice old Victorian house.
Yeah. Lots of notes.
That had a porch. And I would sit on that porch, catching the breezes coming up the hill with my book. And you could see people go by and still say hello and engage, but people knew that when you're in your porch and you're reading,
yeah,
they kind of would leave you alone, and I could get up and acknowledge when I wanted to. So, and like I said, in the summertime, you know, I do remember reading a book, and it could have been, you know, The Sailor Dog, and then having my seemingly endless summer. And where I would build little houses in the little woods next to our house. I mean, literally build houses.
Yeah.
And then I mentioned the Golden Book of Elves and Fairies. Add the idea of little people mm-hmm. in these houses. And I was endlessly enthused with what I was reading and then building. And it was like my mother used to call me and say I'm busy as a beaver, or in her accent, you're busy as a beaver. But I was always doing the books I was reading, it seemed, you know, or drawing them.
Yeah.
I loved drawing them. And, endless sketches of Joan of Arc, trying to imagine what she was like. And then, of course, the summertime is when, at least when I was growing up, we were free-range children.
Mm-hmm.
I was not plugged into camps. I remember the first camp I was in was YWCA camp, and for 2 weeks I was really regimentated, and I remember thinking, this isn't so fun. And so it was better for me to just kind of meander in the woods, join pickup kickball games or softball games, and it was certainly less expensive for my parents. And but yeah, the Joan of Arc thing, I was then, I mean, my dad was disabled, but he was still in it. Able, he was kind of like became the person at home all the time, making food for us and hanging out the clothes. I remember him doing that. But he did make a sword for me that I then marked up like Joan of Arc's sword. And so I would kind of wheel around in the backyard pretending to be Joan of Arc. And endless again in the summertime. It was like galloping through the woods.
Yeah.
And I think, I hope children can do that today. I'm not sure they can, because that pairing of reading and then acting it out,
mm-hmm.
I think was pretty magical for me.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's not just sitting and reading. It was like then being it.
Mm-hmm. Incorporating it into play.
Yeah, incorporating it into play. I think we had a little block party yesterday in our neighborhood, which was great because we have an alley, and it's a safe place for kids to hang out, and it does, and it's how my boys grew up, more children coming into the neighborhood, so they're all feeling safe and happy to play. I just hope everyone's reading.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it gives you ideas that you then can run with.
Yeah.
So that's what I remember reading on the porch. And I remember then playing in the woods, acting out the characters, building the houses, the little fairy homes. And then I remember when I got older, I remember how my mother had this box set of the Bronte sisters' books. It was Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights. And I remembered, I must have been about 12, that I pulled out Jane Eyre. And again, I was always fascinated by the illustrations because this was this vintage edit series, beautiful woodcuts. But I read that book one summer, and I was so proud of myself that I read a grown-up book.
Yeah.
And I remember having to look up words and all that stuff, but I was diligent, and then I was getting it, and then I realized what an amazing heroine this was. So I was finding heroines in my life.
And
as a little girl growing up in the 60s, it was important because there weren't many female role models out there, other than certainly my mother, but it wasn't obvious that women were in leadership or had a sense of agency about their lives. And so, again, I had Joan of Arc, and then I had Jane Eyre, and it was all through books. So I think, and we had to do, during school, it was interesting, school, we had to do book reports every week. I went to Catholic school, K through six, and then I went to public schools because I was into science. And they had a better system, but it turned it into work. It really did. Mm-hmm. Whereas summertime, you're on your own time, and you're just doing it because you love it.
And it made it like a good time to experiment with the adult books, right?
You know,
you don't have to write a book report.
I don't have to write a book. I didn't have to analyze it.
Right.
That definitely takes away from
it. Yeah.
I know they're talking about that a lot in the school circle of instruction and librarianship, is letting them choose the book so they have more engagement and don't feel so put off by reading.
Yeah, I mean, it's you really want it to be a source of refreshment mm-hmm. and renewal.
Yeah.
It's absolutely essential that you learn how to read. But it, as any good teacher will say, the goal is to get them to love to read, mm-hmm. not to just have it be a chore.
Yeah.
I can't get over how important it is to look at the printed page and then yet let your imagination play it out, your own movie reel. Mm-hmm. No one else is interpreting that for you. You are the author of that story, and then you turn it into your own life. I think that I love movies, don't get me wrong. I love theater. But again, you are the one that's the director and the audience when you're reading a book. Mm-hmm. And then you act it out and you're the star.
Yeah.
That's great. So it gives you room to be creative, but also like in a very empowering way.
Yeah.
So we want to thank Kathy again for coming to chat with us about books and reading and how important she thinks libraries are in that process.
Yeah, I just love her recollections of bringing the books to life for herself.
Yeah, and carrying that through to her children and starting the cycle of lifelong reading.
Moving on from that, we've got, I was able to sit down with MIT Spokes, who are a group of MIT students traveling around the country on bike, or traveling across the country by bike while teaching STEM workshops to kids and teens. So we're sitting down right now with MIT Spokes, offered an all-day learning event at the Louisa County Library on June 1st. So I'm going to go around in a circle and have everyone say their name.
Hi, I'm Bethany.
Hi, I'm Alex.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Kate.
I'm Lisa.
I'm Delia.
I'm Annie.
I'm On.
Okay, and so I'll just kind of throw this question at the whole group. Can you tell us a little bit about MIT Spokes?
Yes. So MIT Spokes is a student group run out of the Edgerton Center of MIT. So basically, we're an outreach program. This is the sixth year that a team has gone biking across the country over the course of the summer, teaching STEM workshops of our own design along the way. So this summer, we'll be biking from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco over the course of about 72 days and teaching at about 9 locations along the way. And we'll be teaching 4 different STEM workshops we've designed on a variety of topics.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. So you said you're going to be visiting about 9 different locations along the way. How did you choose those locations? And more specifically, how did you choose this library?
So a lot of the locations that we're teaching at this year have been locations that Spokes has taught at in previous years. So we're trying to establish and maintain those connections every year. Louisa County Library is actually a new location that we decided on this year. And we try to target areas where the populations are smaller, where there might not be as strong of a or as well-structured of a STEM curriculum, just to try to introduce the MIT hands-on approach of math and science to the students in those areas.
That's great. So what do you think makes this kind of experience important for kids?
I think for me personally, one of the reasons why I decided to do this is I'd like to be the person that some little kid thinks about when they are picking what they want to do when they grow up. They're like, oh, that person was really cool. Because I've definitely had role models like that in my life. And I think it would be really important and neat for kids to see that scientists and engineers are not just like kind of nerds trapped in a closet, but are instead athletic and engage with their communities and super excited to like see the world and kind of share passion.
And I think it's important for students to see older students in that way as role models, because often the way people learn about science, technology, and math is either in school or through reading or that type of more academic structure from often older authority figures. And so it can be a little bit more relatable when you have college students coming in saying, this is what I'm interested in, and here are some fun examples of ways we can play around with it to get students interested. And also, I think these fields of science and math and engineering can seem very lofty and unattainable to many students, especially because I think when I was in middle school, I probably didn't know what engineering was at all. So bringing the opportunity to have hands-on workshops that are really exciting and that students can feel like they've made something and really gotten to engage with it is really important to us.
And why did you, or each of you, or however many of you, have a good answer for this? What made you personally decide to get involved?
I think I already kind of spoke to that, but another thing that was really interesting to me was like I'd like to spend a summer kind of seeing parts of the country that I don't normally get to see. I'd also like to like become more fit, and biking across the country is probably a really good way to do that. My legs hurt, but that's
that's such a good answer too. So today is the first day of our actual summer reading program. It always starts June 1st. And our theme this year is Reading Takes You Everywhere. It sounds like MIT Spokes also takes you everywhere. So it's a good fit.
I've heard of this term called coastal elitism. It might be a little strong of a term to use considering where we're coming from. I think at least people on Spokes are from pretty diverse backgrounds, but once we got funneled into the college sort of environment, from there, I think at least my perspective has kind of been limited. So I know that there's a wide range of people to meet across the United States, and I think we've already talked to a lot of really interesting people and learned more about what people's lives are like outside of our little bubble, and that's been really eye-opening for me so far.
And I think for me, I've always enjoyed teaching in science and math, and in high school and college I've done a lot of things like tutoring and working with students, and that's something I've always enjoyed, and also being outdoors and trying new things, traveling, being active. So this kind of combines all of that. The way I found out about it actually is kind of funny. There was an email sent out to some of the dorm lists and things like that, and the subject line was, want to bike across the country this summer? And so obviously I read that email and was pretty intrigued, so I thought it was a really cool combination, as well as I echo what Delia said. So far, even though we're just a couple days in, we've met such incredible people, whether it's those who are hosting us or just those we meet at random spots along the way. So it's been really exciting to meet all of these people, even though we haven't even left the state of Virginia yet.
Can you give me a little, like a short description of the kind of workshops that you are offering today?
Mm-hmm. So the workshop that Bethany and I are teaching is called 3-2-1 Build, and it's essentially a design challenge workshop where we give kids a task at hand and say, well, you have these materials and this amount of time, work in teams to create a solution. So
An example would be the raw egg challenge, which they're given like papers, straws, toothpicks, and rubber bands, and they have to create a capsule to prevent a raw egg from cracking at certain heights. Another one would be like the Dots Tower challenge, where they get gumdrops and toothpicks and have to create the tallest structure possible in a certain amount of time. So basically challenges that allow kids to use their creativity and their team building skills to work together to create something cool.
And then the workshop that Annie and I are teaching is called Scratch from Scratch, and it is an introductory computer science coding workshop. And the reason it's called Scratch is because that's the tool that we're using. This was actually developed at MIT in the Media Lab in the Lifelong Kindergarten Group, which I think is a really cool name. But basically, the idea of this software, it's available for free online, so anyone can try it out, is there are lots of tutorials and really exciting, very visual-based ways of programming. And so in our workshop today, we'll be leading students through some of these, as well as letting them kind of discover it for themselves and pick out tutorials that are most of interest to them to create games and simulations and exciting visual things on the screen. It's kind of drag and drop, but you have to really think through the stepwise process of creating it. So hopefully this will introduce kids to kind of the power and the interesting aspects of computer science.
Great. The workshop me and Matthew are running is an electronics workshop. We are going to show kids how electromagnetic trains work, how to breadboard, which is basically a neat and compact way to plug in wires and LEDs and other circuit components. And then by the end of our workshop, hopefully we're going to have them build a robot, and then they're going to be able to run a small drag race to see who built the best robot, which I think is going to be super fun for the kids.
That is super cool.
And Alex and I are going to be running like a photography workshop. Something that's personally interesting to me is kind of that intersection between science and art. And to that end, we're going to be having the kids build this thing called a camera obscura, which is basically like box with a hole in it and it lets light in, and you can actually see like an upside down version of whatever it is you pointed at. We're going to kind of explain the physics of light behind, you know, the physics behind it, and hopefully like have them actually get to build something tangible and like put their hands on stuff and kind of see how everything works, mess around with it.
Great. And then the final question for all of you, if you have an answer, is what are you reading right now?
I feel like this isn't going to be very exciting.
So I do this thing wherein I read like four books at once, yeah, and like do bits and pieces of each of them because I get distracted and I'm like, I'm bored of this and I'm bored of that. But I'm listening to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because I've listened to it before, but fell asleep for part of it and then I'm like, crap, I don't know where I am. So I'm starting again. It's very funny. I'm entertained. And another book that I'm actually have a physical copy of is Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I started it a while ago and I really connected with the idea of going on the open road and kind of seeing parts of the country and how that makes you think and relate with the world around you. And it was part of the reason why I decided to go on this trip. So I felt like it would be appropriate to bring it along and keep reading it.
So I'm on a bit of a political philosophy kick right now, which is super exciting stuff. And I'm currently reading The Closing of the American Mind by Alan Bloom, who is a political philosopher writing a lot of stuff in the 80s. And it actually ties in pretty well to the spokes thing. It's about sort of what Annie talked about with like university elitism and sort of the idea of like universities are not really training people to be thinkers so much as just like making worker drones. And yeah, just sort of the idea of like learning should be more of a holistic experience. Recent reads include Cat's Cradle by Kurt Vonnegut, which is a really entertaining book. I really enjoy Vonnegut's writing. And Survival in Auschwitz, which is a book by Primo Levi, who survived through Auschwitz during World War II. And that was a really intense and really, I guess, perspective-granting read. Like, my problems are not maybe as real problems as they sometimes feel like, so.
Good variety there.
I just finished reading A Higher Loyalty by James Comey, which I feel like probably a lot of people have been interested in reading it. It's been on my list for a while, but I finally got around to it. And basically, it's just kind of a autobiographical type account by Comey of his experiences regarding leadership and how that's kind of changed over the years. And he talks about a lot of his role models working in the FBI, working as the Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General for the United States. It's just interesting to get that insider's perspective on what's happening with our current presidency and like what he's up to now. I'm also trying to get through Guns, Germs, and Steel by Yara Diamond. I feel like this is required reading for a lot of high schoolers, but not for me. And after reading the description a few times, I decided this is something worth actually reading. It's a really lofty goal for a book to have. It's basically trying to explain why the world is why it is, but starting way back. So going over all of the ancient civilizations, why they developed where they were, why certain technologies developed in certain places. And it's kind of surprising to hear like how much of it is geographical compared to a result of any superiority. I think that's like the main point that's being driven into me through reading this book, but it's really interesting as well, and I'm learning a lot about like the history of the world.
It's a little dense,
yeah.
I'm a big science fiction fan. Right now I'm reading through the first book in the Culture series, and it's just kind of focusing on the society that lives in kind of a post-scarcity future where they fully embrace machines and AI. And then just kind of like looking at how it interacts with those other societies around it and how they've kind of rejected that idea in favor of more traditional types of societies.
I recently finished reading The Circle by Dave Eggers, which was an interesting read, kind of about how our technologically driven worlds could go crazy. Like imagine a Google type company that has now erased all privacy in the world. And so it was an interesting read for sure. In high school, we'd read his memoir, which is totally different, so it's interesting to hear this science fiction-y thing that's sort of based on current fears in the world. Now I'm not quite sure what I'll read next. I do have an audiobook downloaded on my phone that Delia and I tried to listen to in the car. We'll see how far I get, which is Wild by Cheryl Strayed, which has become really, really popular recently, and I figured it would be entertaining to hear about someone else's kind of epic physical journey as we embark on ours. We'll see. But
the first part was just really sad. I expected an intense tale of like hiking through. What was the premise of this?
The Pacific Crest Trail.
Okay. Yeah. But it was just about her relationship with her mother, and it was pretty. It was sad.
Yeah, we started listening to it expecting like all the hiking adventures and her struggles on the trail. And I was like, oh, this is some serious stuff about family struggles. So we'll see if we can progress through that and get to the the hiking component. I mean, obviously all is relevant, but it wasn't what we were expecting from the start.
I just finished reading a bunch of children's books because I finished a children's literature class. So I read like Peter Pan, The Hobbit, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, a bunch of, you know, children's classics. The book that I currently have with me on the trip is The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath, and it was recommended to me because I enjoyed The Catcher in the Rye, and I've heard it's a similar style. I don't really know what it's about, but I'm very excited to get to it.
It's going to be a little bit heavier than the children's
books.
Good for that change of pace.
So right now I am reading a collection of essays by Ralph Waldo Emerson. When I first picked it up, it seemed pretty small, so I thought I could get through it fairly quickly. but it turned out to be extremely dense, and so it's taking a while to get through it. But it's really interesting to see his perspective on the world, and since at MIT I'm doing mostly technical classes and stuff, the way he sees the world is really different, and about like why we should look at history and everything. That's not something I really thought about until I started reading the book. Another one I'm reading is Connecticut Yankee. That was recommended to me by my English teacher a year ago, and I'm just starting to get around to it now. So,
summer's a good time to get into those.
Yeah, the book I most recently finished, I'm gonna butcher this name, Colorless Sakura Tazaki by Murakami. I read it because I really liked Murakami's writing, and it's basically a coming-of-age story about a man whose friends suddenly decided to reject him from the group for no apparent reason, and it goes through his whole way of how he deals with it and how, like, anyone can deal with not having, like, as close social relationships to anybody, like, so suddenly, and how they deal with, like, loneliness and depression, and it was an interesting read, yeah.
He always has some interesting, like, sort of magical realism elements, or, like, is this a dream sequence? I don't know what's happening here. All right, well, if there's anything else that you want to tell me about Spokes, or is there any place that we can follow along with your journey online?
Yes, so we have a website going. It's mitspokes.com, and there you can read about more about Spokes, about each of us, about our curriculum, the route that we're going on, and we also have a blog where we're posting every day what we do that day. So definitely follow along. We also have an Instagram going, which is mitspokes, where we also post pictures every day. And just for more information about our team, we have 5 freshmen on the team, 2 juniors, and then 1 recent MIT graduate, just to put things into context. So, yeah.
Great. We will include links to all of those things in our show notes so people can find you easily. Those are all of the questions that I had for you, so thank you so much for taking some time to do this with us. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So it's really great that MIT Spokes was able to visit and chose to do their STEM program at Louisa County Library, being a new location for them this year.
Yes. And they had a lot of interesting book selections. It was a really great variety.
Yeah, that's a great reading list.
And I like hearing what students are reading in the summer off from their, I'm sure, extensive required reading. As
I know. I used to do the same thing.
Students.
Get
right.
done and then be like, okay, now have some pleasure reading.
Yes. So a big thank you to them, and another big thank you to City Councilor Galvin.
Yes. While we're at it, thanks to the Friends of the Library.
As always.
Whose financial support makes this podcast and all library programs possible. If you want to know more or join the Friends, you can find out at jmrlfriends.org or just visit the link in our show notes.
If you have books that you'd like us to read and talk about, we're happy to hear about those. Just email us at podcast@jmrl.org.
Coming up in 2 weeks, we will be chatting with another supervisor from one of our counties in our service area. And we will feature another library program.
Yes. That's it for us today. So thanks for tuning in, and we're glad to be on the same page.